Have you ever had to deal with your child coming home from school with some pretty harsh behaviors, only to be told that they're only behaving that way because they feel safe around you? Yeah. Great. This is what we're going to talk about today. It's actually called a restraint collapse, and I'm going to go over the details as what that looks like, why it happens, and what you could do to help your child going through that. So we're going to jump right in. For those who don't know me, my name is Danielle C. Baker. I am the founder and CEO of Being Connected. I'm also a registered early childhood educator with over 20 years experience in the field. I help parents and educators navigate the realities of what parenting is today, but don't get it twisted. When you work with me, we're putting the child's needs first. So we're going to have to put our ego and pride aside. And let's get to Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Talk to Danielle podcast. I am your host, Danielle C. Baker. And before we get started, be sure to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening or watching from. And of course, with season two, this episode is brought to you by the Self-Esteem Doctor Online Academy with the amazing Dr. Simone Alicia. There's a wealth of resources there that can help you with your child's self-esteem and confidence and so much more. So I will leave a link in the description for you to check that out. I highly recommend it. So we're going to jump right in with this beautiful story of parents who have neurodivergent children. It's mostly for neurodivergent children. And it also works for adults. So this is where we're going to talk about the restraint collapse. I'll explain what that is. I'll explain kind of three ways or three reasons why that happens in general. I'm including adults here, and then break it down to what triggers it and what that looks like in children, especially when they're coming back from school. And what you can do to help support your child. And what that would look like. So I'll give you some concrete example of what that looks like when you're trying to help your child through that. Now, it is a real thing. A lot of people are just like, ah, that's just the child behaving. They're just, trying to manipulate you. They're out of control. It's your parenting style. No, especially when you're dealing with neurodivergent children, this is real. And this is why we need to talk about it a little bit more and support those parents, because every parent that I've worked with who have to deal with those behaviors, it could show up as a meltdown, a complete dysregulation, or a complete shutdown, where they just go in hermit mode. So it's quite exhausting for a parent to have to deal with that, especially after they've had their long day and they've probably had a rough morning as well. And now that's just building up at the end of the day. And you always hear the infamous, "Well, that's because they feel safe with you," and it is true. But great, can I pass on that? Is pretty much how we feel as parents when we have to deal with that. We have to keep ourselves in control and help our child stay in control as well. So, restraint collapse is basically just if you've ever come home at the end of the day, and I'm talking to adults here as well. It usually shows up in ADHD or autism. It can show up in other things, but you're just completely exhausted when you get home at the end of the day, or if you've had to go through appointments, meetings, you had to go out shopping, you come home and you're absolutely exhausted. You're just waiting for the day to end so you can go to sleep. There's nothing else you can take on. You can't think, you can't focus, you can get extra work done. You're absolutely done. And that's what restraint collapse is. And it's basically due to the fact that we're holding in our emotions, right? It's emotional exhaustion. When you are neurodivergent, it takes a lot out of you to pretend or act so-called normal, right? So it's an emotional exhaustion for autism, and ADHD could also be a physical exhaustion. I will explain that a little bit later. But when you get home, you're finally in a safe place where you can be yourself. You don't have to put on airs, you don't have to put on the masks. You can be the individual that you are, and that's why everything just kind of drains out of you, because it takes a lot of energy to pretend to be somebody you are not. And you're working to keep everything in, you're working so hard to keep everything in to fit in that by the end of the day you're done. And when you finally get home, behind closed doors. It's just you and the four walls and then your loved ones. You can actually drop those masks and those restraints and be yourself. And that's when you find yourself exhausted. And this can show up in two different ways. You can either have an emotional breakdown when you get home, which we usually call meltdowns for children, where it's like an explosion. Now you're just raging and you can't understand yourself, and nobody around you can understand you. Everything triggers you. Or you can completely shut down, where you retreat and you'll isolate yourself. You don't want to talk to anybody. You don't want anybody talking to you. And so there's the what we will call the implosion. So there's the explosion or the implosion, and it can show up differently from day to day, or from person to person. So again, I'll be generalizing a lot. Everybody's different, but that those are usually the guidelines or the kind of reference points that you can have if you want to look into it a little bit more. For autistic people, usually, again, I'm generalizing, there's so many different variations. But this restraint collapse or this exhaustion comes from masking, because as an autistic person, you understand that your behaviors are judged. They're not necessarily accepted socially. And the only thing that you can self-soothe or self-regulate with are your stims. And you have to hold those back because they make everybody else around you uncomfortable. If you want to learn more about stims, I do have an episode on that as well. So I encourage you to go check that out. So for autistic people, usually they will collapse from restraining themselves from being themselves, or for using their go-to to soothe, to help them calm down, which are their stims. So it's usually an emotional, just from masking. They have to pretend to be somewhat normal, and they cannot revert to their way of coping in a social setting, because again, it makes them stand out. So they are absolutely exhausted. They've had to hold back and restrain themselves and just kind of stay in their little bubble to make sure that they're not ruffling any feathers. So they get home and they just blow up or implode. For ADHDers, it could be a little different. They could get their, I mean, AD, people with ADHD do wear masks as well, but usually it's more of an energy depletion. It takes a lot of energy to accomplish tasks, to complete tasks. Time management is also an issue if you're at work and it's a pretty high pace. So keeping your time management, staying on task, or even task switching sometimes can create, you kind of have to hold everything in. And the thing with people with ADHD, especially at work, when you hear this expression of we got to give it our 100%, we know that that's not possible. We know it's not a literal thing. It just means, you know, we have to give it our all. But for people with ADHD, they will actually give their 100% or more. So they will completely exhaust themselves to the task, thinking that that's what they're it's ex is expected of them. So ADHDers are quite intense with their work. They take it seriously and they're good at it, but they will exhaust themselves. So when they come home, it could be a physical depletion where you'll just basically pass out on the couch from performing so much, right? Or trying to perform so much, trying to stay on task, trying to stay on time, trying to stay focused. It's exhausting. At the end of the day, you just crash. So those could be also triggered. There's kind of extra stuff that tires you out is usually it can be a sensory overload where you know there's a lot of noise, the lights are released, right? So anybody that's very sensitive to sensory stuff, it will tire them out if there's a lot of movement around them, a lot of noise, a lot of lighting. It will kind of trigger that they have to focus on cutting that out. And so it will take a lot of their energy. It's also the social interactions. They know that they have to behave a certain way, so they will put on the masks. And it's exhausting when you have to be like, oh, all day long when you just want to be like, leave me alone. It's hard. It's exhausting socially. Even if you're not interacting with people, just going out shopping for something for me that is absolutely exhausting. And I love interacting with people. I'm a people person, but being in a mall or in a really busy store, it trains me because now I know I need to behave a certain way. Not that I care, but it takes a lot of energy out of me because of that and sensory overload. There's a lot of noise, a lot of movement. People don't move. People think they're alone, and that drives me crazy. I get road rage from shopping, but so I get home exhausted just the thought of going shopping. I'm like, no, if you know you have a doctor's appointment coming up, you will come back exhausted. Because there's so much going on all at once. It could also be from task switching. Like I mentioned earlier, it takes a lot of focus, especially for people with the ADHD. If you're finally focused on a task and you're getting work done, and then somebody comes in and yeah, switching. Oh, and then, oh, man, I forgot this paper. I need to get up and go get this. I left my pen there. I gotta go. The task switching is absolutely exhausting for somebody with ADHD because now they've lost that focus and it's going to take everything out of them to co come back to that task and focus again. Before I get into the children, that I'll just kind of generalize it for the adults who do have to go through that, and they do end up with restraint exhaustion at the end of the day. There are some solutions where the best thing really is to share your stories, to share your struggles, your triggers with other people who will understand it. So if you can surround yourself or be part of a group or a community of people that go through the same thing you do, there are a lot of support groups for ADHD, for autism, both virtually and in person. There are some actual, physical groups, but just the fact that you're able to share your frustrations, to share your challenges, and you'll be around people who live through the same thing and have found solutions that worked for them. So if you're able to get advice from somebody who goes through the same thing as you, it could be a little bit more frustrating if it's a neurotypical person that tells you, oh, you should do this, and you're like, oh, great, thanks, but somebody who lives your reality will be able to share some solutions, and everybody is different, so those solutions may not work, but that's the beauty of having a group, is there'll be more than one option there, so you can find what works for you. It'll help you solve those problems and kind of adapt and not feel alone in this, right? It's normal. You just have to find your normal, and so that you could connect with others who understand what you're doing. You can kind of develop a life that works for you, so you're not coming home completely exhausted, and you can actually be a bit more productive with your day because you're not crashing mid-afternoon, right? For children, I find, even again, every child is different, but if you can find after-school activities that are kind of leisure, but they are interest focused, so the children will often love or kind of almost be obsessed with a certain theme. So if you sign them up to clubs, after school clubs or programs that are not too demanding, but that is something that they truly love. So it could be a computer club, a programming club, it could be, I don't know, tennis if they love tennis. There's so many different clubs out there that they can actually release some of that tension and frustration on an activity that they actually love. But not only that, but they will be surrounded by peers who have the same interests. So now they're actually interacting socially, but in a positive way. They don't have to mask as much because now they're doing something that they like. So that helps a lot to tone it down. It's just to find the right activity and the right group that will be able to help them with that as well. So how does that look for kids? We're just going to jump right in. And of course, now we're talking mostly this will happen when they come back from daycare if they're a little younger, or after school. Right. School is absolutely exhausting for neurotypical children. It is so much more for neurodivergent children. It's constant masking, constant restraint. They need to restrain from being themselves. They need to sit still. listen, not talk back, not share their opinions, not stim to calm down. And then if they do act up, they get punished, and the only time they can actually go in and release some of that energy, now rhesus is taken away from them and they're not able to release that extra energy. So it's exhausting. They come home and most of the time they will have a breakdown. And a lot of the times it'll start on the bus on the way home. You'll get those calls where your child misbehave. You could be threatened of losing the transport because they're misbehaving in the school bus, but that is usually a sign of that restraint, exhaustion. It's too much for them. So when they come home, they will break down. Like I said earlier in the beginning, they will implode or explode, right? So when you have the implosion, they will isolate. They will refuse to engage with anybody in the family. They won't want to talk to anybody. They certainly are not going to want to tell you how their day went. They don't want to talk to anybody. They just want to shut down. Retreat, right? And go into what I call hermit mode. So they don't want to engage with anybody. They don't want to talk to you. They don't want you talking to them. That's usually what the shutting down of the implosion would be like for children. And then the opposite is the explosion, which is the meltdown. So a full-on rage. It could be aggressive, it could be yelling, it could be whining, whatever that looks like in your child. And this is the exhausting part for the parents. When they say, well, your child is in a safe place now and they feel safe with you to kind of dump those frustrations of the day. And you're just like, oh, that's wonderful, but I really don't want it. Can we give that to somebody else, please? Right. And I laugh just because I've gone through it and I know what parents go through when this happens. It will also happen with children where the co-parenting situation is not really good and children feel more comfortable with one parent or more safer emotionally with another parent. It's where the behaviors will happen the most. So again, for the parent who is getting that side of the behavior, is just know that it's because your child feels safe. When they're with the other parent and they're being good and they're not saying anything and they're not exploding or imploding, it's because they don't feel safe with that parent and they need to mask. So you need to see it that way. Your child needs help. And they feel safe coming to you with that. And so that's pretty much what that would look like for children after school when they come home or after a big day, right? Excursions or field trips will do the same. Anything that's out of the ordinary, if you go on vacation, you might get those more often because things, again, are a little out of the ordinary, out of the routine, and they're just exhausted from not being able to be themselves. They have to behave a certain way that is not natural to them. And that's the big difference, is it's not natural for them. That's why it requires more energy. So how do you support your child going through this, right? And this will work for you as well, but we are going to talk mostly about children. The one thing is, I'll give you four different things. And elaborate on them a little bit, but one of the very important thing is to be supportive. You have to understand that they're basically just venting, right? That's what we have to remember. They feel safe. It's just like if you're going out with your friends and you're just kind of dump them all your frustrations, you're not expecting them to solve your problems. You just need somebody to hear. You need to release it. And so that's what they're doing. They're just doing it maybe in a bit more aggressive way or a bit more worrying way. If they go silent as a parent, you can worry about that as well, thinking, what's happening to my child? What happened at school? Maybe nothing happened at school. They're just exhausted and they don't want to talk about it. So whether they're imploding and you're asking questions and they just don't want to talk, or if they're having a meltdown and they're getting aggressive, they're yelling. One thing you could do would just be, instead of, oh, how did talk to me? What happened? Who did the, who hurt you? Did you get? They don't want to hear that. Whether they're having a meltdown or whether they're just going into hermit mode, either way, they're not going to want to be questioned. They don't want to be interrogated. So you could just say, oh, it was a really long day today, wasn't it? Just so that they know that you understand. And you just say something like, I've got you. Or it's okay, I got you. I'm here for you. Or just, it's been a long day, isn't it? And just leave it there. You don't ask more questions. They may open up to you right away just because you made them feel like you understand them. And then just say, okay, when you feel better, I'm here for you. Now, whether they're having the meltdown and there's nothing you can do at that point, or if they just want to be alone for a little bit and say, okay, well, when you're ready, I'm here for you. One thing, I think that would be the first one, the first thing to do. You could even have it in the car when you're picking them up. Feed them fuel, feed them, make sure they drink water. This is something that's hard for them to regulate at school. They will forget to drink water. They will not necessarily eat as well because they're so rushed. They are distracted, right? So they may not eat very well when they're at school. They may forget to eat, and there's not a lot of supervision at school because that's just the reality of schools. So they can't be on them to make sure that they're eating properly. So sometimes they're just hangry or just exhausted because they've used up all their fuel. So having snacks, giving them water can help. It just kind of calms them down. When you're drinking and eating, you have to regulate your breathing as well, right? So you don't choke. So that will help them to kind of calm down as well. Get their favorite snacks and just help them, right? It makes a huge difference. So start with that. The rest, all right? So decrease the stimulation. A lot of them are coming in overstimulated. So it's not time to program huge activities or get into the homework right away, or rush to soccer. Or soccer is good, movement is good, that'll be the next one, but decrease stimulation. So have quiet activities, or a quiet space for them that they can just kind of just think of yourself when you've had a hard day. You don't want to be somewhere where there's just like loud music, a lot of movement, a lot of noise, a lot of rah-rah-rah. You just want to stay alone. So it's the same. Just think about the rest. And then there's movement. Movement is known to help regulate, self-regulate. So it doesn't have to be, again, an organized sport, because now they got to wear that mask again. They gotta have to pretend to be somebody that they're not. They need to work really hard at fitting in. So it could just be an activity that you do at home. And that will help quite a bit. So that, swinging, if you have the swings, and people with autism will be able to, or they have children with autism, will have a lot of the types of those blankets, the swings, the weighted blankets, the weighted vests, the weighted toys, anything that is just kind of, it'll help them calm down a little bit. But the jumping, there's little games I'm going to mention later on, so that helps a lot. What does that look like, right? I gave you four. Be supportive. Say, oh, it's been a really long day today, hasn't it? Or I'm here for you whenever you're ready. It's okay. Feed them, give them some time, some kind of quiet time for themselves when they get home from school before you jump into the other activities that you have to do. And get them moving, going to the park sometimes, just going outside to jump, take some breath there, run up and down the steps if you have to. Take a breath of fresh air, I meant. So those will help a lot. How would that look like, right? So being supportive on that side of things would be to avoid asking about their day. Okay, their day was exhausting. They don't need to tell you that. You already know that it's been exhausted. So forget about it. Wait until they're relaxed, and then you can ask questions. But don't start off by like, "Hey, how was your day? Oh, you had a bad day today. What happened?" Blah, 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 blah. Just avoid that altogether. Just say, "Hey, I'm happy to see you. I was thinking about you today about this thing." Another thing that can help too is if you're picking them up from school, use that car ride as quiet. They can have their headphones on. You can play some music. You don't need to start going about the day or what kind of day you've had or the news that you got from grandma and grandpa. You could just have a quiet little ride home, and that gives you time so that when you're home, they've already had time to decompress a little bit, as it won't be as bad. Usually, there are some exceptions. So just wait until they're relaxed. Feed them the minute they're in the door. Feed them, water them. I'm talking like you have plants, but no, just make sure water is important. I'm telling you, I worked in schools for over 15, 20 years. The children forget about their water bottles, and you can try to remind them, but they're not going to remember. on the way to the water bottle, they'll get distracted and they'll do something else. So hydrate them, feed them. It'll help a lot. Don't expect a lot of self-regulation. So when they're coming in at the end of the day and they're in restraint exhaustion, they're not going to be able to self-soothe. They're not going to be able to control their emotions or their actions. They're just going to be in reactive mode. So don't expect that from them, and don't start telling them that they should know better, or that they should to use their tools, or because at that point they're done. It's too late for that. Just let the storm pass. Let them recoup, and then you can talk about other tools that they could use before they get to that, right? So that will help. So just don't expect them to be able to self-soothe. They're past that already. So you not having that expectation will help you cope with it, because you're going in expecting your energetic child to be able to control themselves. But when they're exhausted like that, they can't anymore. That's done. So, and it'll take more energy for them to actually do it, so they'll be even more exhausted. So just don't come in expecting them being able to control themselves, at least for a little while, right? It'll eventually tone down, and then they'll be able to control themselves. Find quiet activities. So again, it could just be listening to the music that they like. A little bit of screen time does not hurt anyone, especially after a long day like this. I know a lot of people like we should avoid screen time, but there's some strategic times that you can use it if it calms them down. Screen time can be a form of stimming for some autistic children, so it's good to do that, or just have, just lounge around, just chill, and relax for a little bit before we get into the homework and dinner and bath and all the other routines that's going on. Play outside if you're able to before you even walk into the house. If you are able to play outside, and again, it doesn't have to be an organized sport. You should avoid an organized sport at that point, but just even if it's just hopping from the square, the sidewalk squares, or skipping, or anything like that, it's just spinning around, tossing a ball if they like that, jump rope, anything that they would like to do. The one thing that I used to do with my children was just mini parkours, right? Just for them to skip from one foot thing to the other, and it helped a lot as well. So another thing that you can do if you can't be outside and you're inside, you could always say, okay, and that works in the morning as well, because there's a routine you can do in the morning that will help them kind of regulate before they get to school, and it takes out the anxiety. But you could say the hallway when or the entrance is a river, and the tiles or whichever you have, you could set some little area, little stickers, or even the shoes or whatever. Those are the stones, and they have to skip over from one to the other to not get wet, to not to fall. You could do the floor is lava if you want, but the river is also nice for those who don't like fire. You could just kind of have them skip from one, I don't know, it could be anything, it does the gloves, something, as long as they don't slip, and gets them moving, it gets the circulation going, it gets their breathing changed up a little bit, so it clears the mind, and it helps a lot. And allow for an occasional day off. And I get a lot of heat for that, but I used to do it for my kids as well. With my kids, I called them lazy days, and it's not really a good name. I could just say rest day, but my kids like calling it a lazy day, because that's really what it was. When they woke up one morning, and I could tell that they were just struggling, they were just tapped out completely. And I could tell that the anxiety was building up, that they had to go to school, and they had to, and I would just say, okay, how about we have a lazy day today? And I would call the school, tell them they were sick, or that they weren't coming. I don't have to say that they're sick, but just to say, they're just not coming in, they have appointments or whatever reason the schools need. And we just stay in our PJs and make popcorn, watch a movie, and do something, or they would just play video games for a little bit. But just to have that date, and they still talk about it now. They appreciate it, and they actually said that they're going to do the same with their children. They were not exploiting it. It's not like they were asking for lazy days every day. It would happen maybe 3 or 4 times in the school year, max. But a lot of the times it would be those days, I could see it in them that morning they were just not, they were completely tapped out. And I'd just say, okay, so how about a lazy day? And you could tell just from their body language, it would be, yes, please, you know? And it was just time for us to bond, time for us, if you're able to, because not everybody has that flexibility with their schedule. But I would call in sick from work and tell them I can't come in, or tell them my kids are sick. But a little white lie that is going to help with your child's mental health. So keep that in mind. Again, I'm not promoting having your kids skip school, but in a case where you know that your neurodivergent child is struggling, there's no point in sending them to school. It's going to get worse. They're going to have a very negative experience at school, and they're going to come back even worse. They're not going to learn anything at school if they're already off, right? So this just stay home. They would actually learn sometimes. At the time I worked in science. I would bring them to the lab and prep the equipment and stuff. I was safe. It was a safe environment. But they would come with me in my office, and we'd spend some time in the lab for them to see what's there. So they were learning something with me, but at least they had the day, right? Or they would call. We had a code as well, and most children use that excuse as their belly hurts, their head hurts. So that's usually, if you hear your child say that, especially around lunchtime, their head hurts, the belly hurts, the school calls, it's an indication that they're not feeling well. Anxiety, they're exhausted, and so take that lightly. Your child is telling you they're not really sick. Most of the time they're not sick. They're just not feeling well anymore, and they want that comfort with you. They're asking you to come and comfort them. So take that in a good way instead of scolding them for it. So allow that occasional day off. You don't have to call it a lazy day. It's not necessarily a good thing, but in my family, that was very much appreciated. And that's really it. There's so much more if you do your research on it. There's so much more that they can give you, but those are the bigger guidelines to help you with that restraint, exhaustion. And as an adult, start looking at what can help you. I mean, it's hard when you pass out on the couch and you end up with a 2 hour, 3 hour nap in the middle of the afternoon and you're ready for bed, but you got to roll with the punches for the rest of the evening. It's not easy. So again, find that support group that will help you, just to say, it's tough today, and people will understand. You don't need to explain more. People will understand what that means, and they'll support you for it. It helps quite a bit. And just don't forget that it's real. It is real. And in your child, a lot of people will judge. The schools will judge. It's real. That restraint, it's exhausting. As a neurotypical person, just think as how tired you are. If you're at a big event, you had to plan a wedding, let's say, or like a funeral or anything like this, where those huge emotionally harsh events, you're moving, anything like that. Imagine how exhausted you're doing renovations in your house. You're just, that's how a person will feel. A neurodivergent person will feel like that every day. It's real. So we can't be judging them. They're really going through something, and we should be there to support them more than anything. And this is something that we can do. The schools can help, is to allow those kids to have some quiet time, to have some downtime. They're overstimulated in schools. The lights are bright. You have classrooms with great big windows, but the sun is always in there. The noise level, and then when I say sensory, it's not just sounds and lights, but the classrooms are cluttered. A lot of the times, there's so much stuff everywhere. There's stuff everywhere on the wall. It's too stimulating. It's too distracting. It's exhausting. And on top of that, most of the schools now have sensory rooms for neurodivergent children where they can go, and there's like all these bouncy balls and those swings and everything else that they could use. But schools are not using them properly. They're still seeing those rooms as a reward. But it's not a reward, it's a necessity for those, it's a necessity for those children. Looking at those sensory rooms and saying that it's a reward is like saying if you have a student that needs to get insulin injections and you say, well, no, that's just a reward, you're fine, your sugar levels, you don't look like you're going into diabetic shock, so we're not going to give you the shot today. You didn't have a good day, we're not giving you your insulin today. That's basically what you're doing. It's the same thing. It's not a reward. It's a necessity. If the child is acting up in your class, it's because you've already ignored the signs. You're already not catering to their needs, right? It would be like waiting for a diabetic child to go into a diabetic coma before giving them their insulin. Is the exact same thing. And I'm being very dramatic with this, but it's serious. It is dramatic. You are taking a necessity out of a child that needs it. So make sure that you're using those sensory rooms properly. And I will go even further with the school boards and support the schools. Those teachers are worn down and they're not getting the support that they need. There should be extra people in there. There should be lower class, less students in a class. This would all solve so many problems. So you need to do your part as well. So I'm going to leave you with that. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to contact me. I am a real person. And again, do have a look at it. It is a real thing. It's as an adult, but as your a parent whose child is going through it, so it can help you understand, help you prepare for it, help. There's so many different ways that you can help prevent it. I only gave you four, but there's more. And work it around your child's needs because everybody is different. Everybody will react differently. Keep a really good communication with the schools as well to help so that you can prepare your child for certain situations and they can prepare you for the state that they'll be when they come back in. So keep that in mind as well and keep up your amazing work as parents and support each other. That's the most important thing. So I'll leave you with that. Don't forget to like and follow and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening or watching from. Don't forget to check out the Self-Esteem Doctor Online Academy as well. I'll put the link in the description. And until next time, stay safe, stay awesome, and we'll talk soon.